So anyone here have your Majjhima Nikaya? No? Okay. So maybe I just start to read, and while waiting for Lynn, while waiting for Wenpa Gotami to get the photocopy. Okay? Okay. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ sanghaṃ namassami. So today we are doing this Sutta 19, two kinds of thought. One of the reasons that I choose these suttas because sometimes we can easily carry away by our thoughts, isn't it? And we don't even know, we're completely sucked in and we're in there. And we don't even know how we get there, isn't it? How we ended up there, you know, start from one, you know, little thoughts, and then we go on and on and on, and we also don't know how we end up here. So that's why it's good that we more aware of our thoughts and we be able to, you know, contemplate and reflect on these thoughts and how to deal with, especially with those unwholesome thoughts that leads us to more suffering, incur suffering to ourselves, and also incur suffering to others. So I will start reading, and please stop me if you want to ask any questions. Thus have I heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savati in Jeddah's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir," they replied. The Blessed One said this, "Bhikkhus, before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, it occurs to me, suppose that I divide my thoughts into two classes. Then I set on one side thoughts of sensual desires, thoughts of ill will, thoughts of cruelty, and I set on the other side thoughts of renunciations, thoughts of non-ill will, and thoughts of non-cruelty. As I abide, thus, diligent, ardent, and resolute, a thought of sensual desires arose in me. I understood thus, this thought of sensual desires has arisen in me. This led to my own affliction, to others' affliction, and to the afflictions of both. It obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and leads away from Nibbana. When I consider, this led to my own affliction, it subsides in me. When I consider, this leads to others' affliction, it subsides in me. When I consider, this leads to the afflictions of both, it subsides in me. When I consider, this obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and leads away from Nibbana, it subsided in me. Whenever a thought of sensual desires arose in me, I abandoned it, removed it, did away with it. As I abide thus, diligent, ardent, and resolute, a thought of ill will arose in me, a thought of cruelty arose in me. I understood this. This thought of cruelty has arisen in me. This leads to my own affliction, to others' afflictions, and to the afflictions of both. It obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and leads away from Nibbana. When I consider thus, it subsided in me. Whenever a thought of cruelty arose in me, abandon it, remove it, and I did away with it. So, this is he's mentioned about those thoughts that is unwholesome, especially the thoughts that sensual desires and ill will, cruelty, that is these unwholesome thoughts. Because sometimes, because of lack of mindfulness, and actually, we are what we think, and all that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make our world. So we are so much, you know, sometimes people into their own world. Actually, the thoughts manifest as the world, and the world manifests as deed. This is how we come from our thoughts first, isn't it? Then that leads us to our deeds, action. We're going to do it because, you know, we react to the thoughts, then that we manifest as deed. And deed develops into habits. Then it becomes a certain habitual patterns, you know, doing something. Whenever we have the reactions, then we become like a automatic pilot. We just, you know, because we've been conditioned that way. If we keep doing it, we keep reinforced that. And the habit hardens into our characters. So watch the thoughts and its way with care, and let it spring from love. That's why it's important that share with you one of our supporters that she has a mother that been suffering from depression for many, many years. Her depressions come from because of she wasn't happy. She started to depress because of she married off one of these our supporters at the age of 16, all the way from other countries to Australia. And that time she feel really bad, she feel guilty about it, and she just feel that, you know, that she married off her girl only 16 years old, and she somehow felt that this is her responsibility. And of course, at the beginning, she wasn't happy with the marriage, you know, because she was being arranged, you know, and being married off all the way to Australia. But of course, after that, actually, they both of them become the husband and her become Buddhists, and initially she wasn't happy. But after that, because her husband is a very good husband, a very nice guy, and after that, actually they live a happy life. They have the grandchildren. They both become a Buddhist, and they have the same values in life. And actually, she was really happy, but her mother couldn't stop that. And even she tried to arrange her mother come all the way to Australia to show her mother, look, I'm happy now. Look at my life now. I'm okay. I'm happy. You don't have to carry the guilt anymore. You don't have to feel depressed anymore. Even with that, her mom, in theory, she can't understand. But it's non-self. She's been conditioned. She's been like a habit, you know. And sometimes you just into the habit that, you know, it's just like an addiction, you know. You know that it's no good, but you just can't help yourself. And this is how sometimes these thoughts, you know, when it becomes a deed, so actually sometimes it's hardened into the habit. And she got into the habit of being depressed. And even she knew that, exactly, she knows that, you know, her daughter is fine, she's happy. But then I asked, how's your mom? She said, she's still depressed, you know. It's difficult for her to change. She's been depressed for over 20 over years. And you just ask her to stop, she can't stop it. Especially from someone that not, I mean, her mom is not a Buddhist, you know. And it's someone that is in her, you know, 80s, you know. It's very difficult, you know, to try to help her. And she feel really, she said, you know, even I show her all this, her mom can't help it. And even her mom come to the monastery and, you know, offer dana, and she knows that, you know, but couldn't change. So this is the Buddhist teaching of non-self. This is how we condition, you know, like the mind becomes so set, like a default setting, you know, you set the mind. So that's why sometimes someone, you know, have negative thoughts, negative thoughts. This is how, you know, they shape into that. They become the they have the inclination, they incline to that. And this very, like, this part of them becomes so natural. So whatever pops up, they have the inclination towards that unwholesome thoughts. So that's why it's important that we aware of our thoughts. That's why it's important that, you know, that whatever we do, it's good that we stop before we act. Because sometimes, like, you know, and sometimes it's we try to justify as well, you know. And that's why sometimes if we don't aware of our thoughts, this is how. And we get sucked in, we get carry away. And also this is how, and also that arise with all others' emotion leads to fear, anxieties, you know, and this is all when we are not careful with, if we know that. And this, this is, he mentioned that, you know, whenever that is, you know, that is, he contemplate, he, you know, he noticed that, he knows that, you know, these thoughts will lead to the affliction of others, you know, it caused suffering to others, and it's caused suffering to oneself, and it's also caused suffering to both. So that's why it's important that to be aware of our thoughts and we reflect on that, the consequence of our actions, if we act upon our thoughts. So any questions in regards with this? Then, if bhikkhus, whatever a bhikkhu frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become inclination of his mind. If he frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of sensual desires, he has abandoned the thoughts of renunciations to cultivate the thoughts of sensual desire, and then his mind inclined thoughts of sensual desire. If he frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of ill will, upon thoughts of cruelty, he has abandoned the thoughts of non-cruelty to cultivate the thoughts of cruelty, and then his mind inclines thoughts of cruelties. So when someone frequently, you know, we think of these unwholesome thoughts, for example, think of, you know, sensual desires, or ill wills, or cruelty. So when we appoint that and think about it all the time, so our mind fill with that. So then we have abandoned that thoughts of, you know, renunciations, thoughts of non-cruelties, and thoughts of so we will not cultivate the thoughts of cruelty. So then we have abandoned the thoughts of non-cruelty, and we start to cultivate these unwholesome thoughts. So it's become like part of us, become very natural. So sometimes we know, isn't it, someone that is very negative, no matter even the positive things, what you said, if you go through that person, you filter out, it becomes negative. Okay, so everyone got the copy? So yes, there is now it's 280. So that's why if you always think about those negative thoughts, and this is how we started to cultivate those negative thoughts. It's just like when we feed it, it's grow. So the negative thoughts will grow in us and becomes very natural, like it becomes like part of us. So any questions about that? No? So just as in the last month of rainy season in the autumn, when the crops thicken, a cowherd would guard his cows by constantly tapping and poking them on the side, and that with a stick to check and curb them. What is that? Because he sees that there could be flock imprisoned, fine or blame. If he left them stray into the crops, so too I saw the unwholesome state, danger, degradations, and defilements, and in wholesome states, the blessing of renunciations and the aspect of cleansing. That's like, this is what he said, like, you know, like because of, when we see that the danger of this thoughts, the danger of this defilements. So when we see this danger of defilement, so we know that, you know, that this the danger, so we will be blamed, you know, and this the danger of the defilements, and that lead us to suffering. As I abide thus, diligent, ardent, and resolute thoughts of renunciations arose in me. I understood thus. The thoughts of renunciations has arisen in me. This does not lead to my own affliction or to others' affliction or to the afflictions of both. Its eight, wisdom does not cause difficulties and leads to nibbana. If I think and ponder a point, this thought, even for a night, even for a day, even for a night and day, I see nothing to fear from it. But with excessive thinking and pondering, I might tire my body. And when the body is tired, the mind becomes disturbed. And when the mind is disturbed, it's far from concentration. So I steady my mind internally, quiet it, brought it to singleness, and concentrated it. What is that? So my mind should be disturbed. So sometimes this is what he mentioned, that this does not lead to my own affliction and affliction of others. But even sometimes, like, you know, if we ponder upon this thought, even for a night, a day, but with excessive thinking and pondering, I might tire my body, and the body is tired, and the mind becomes disturbed. When the mind is disturbed, this is far from concentration. They say sometimes, like, even this with this think a wholesome thoughts, that with the excessive thinking, this is what the Buddha's mentioned, that because sometimes, like, with the excessive thinking and the mind, you know, become disturbed, and the mind is disturbed and is far from concentration. So I steady my mind internally and quiet it and brought to singleness and centered and concentrated it. What is that? So my mind should not be disturbed. So he said, as I abide thus, diligent, ardent, and resolute, a thought of non-ill will arose in me, a thought of non-cruelty arose in me. I understood this. The thought of non-cruelty has arisen in me, that this does not lead to my own affliction or others' affliction or to the afflictions of others. It aids wisdom and does not cause difficulties and leads to nibbana. If I think and ponder upon these thoughts, even for a night, even for a day, even for a night and a day, I see nothing to fear from it. But with excessive thinking and pondering, I might tire my body. And when the body is tired, the mind becomes disturbed. And when the mind is disturbed, it's far from concentration. So I steady my mind internally, quiet it, and brought it to singleness and concentrated it. What is that? So that my mind should not be disturbed. Because whatever a bhikkhu frequently thinks and ponder upon, that will become the inclination of his mind. If he's frequently thinks and ponder upon the thoughts of renunciation, he has abandoned the thoughts of sensual desires to cultivate the thoughts of renunciation. And his mind inclines the thoughts of renunciation. If he frequently thinks and ponders upon the thoughts of non-evils, upon thoughts of non-cruelty, he has abandoned the thoughts of cruelty to cultivate the thoughts of non-cruelty, and then his mind inclines towards the thoughts of non-cruelty. So we are not only to restrain ourselves to unwholesome thoughts. But in here, the Buddha encourages us to deliberately to bring up the thoughts of the wholesome thoughts. For example, like when we do some, we offer dhanas, we do something very generous. That is when the Buddha's talk of mention about the renunciation is this not only is not pointed to only for monks and nuns to renounce that the home life, but the renunciation that is given up, like giving up like our given up our material things or given up our defilements, they give. So that's why the Buddha's always encourage and emphasize that when we do something generous, something good, if it, an act of kindness, the Buddha's always encourage us to always, you know, to remind ourselves, to reflect on our own goodness. And this, because when we think of something good that we have done, that will arouse that happiness, isn't it? The happiness of giving, the happiness of renounce, the happiness of letting go. And this kind of happiness is not the kind of happiness to come from the sensual desires. And because it's not relied on our sensory, our senses. And it's something independent, it's not dependent, and not depending the object outside us. That's why this, we can, you know, when we reflect on that, sometimes we got the inspiration and give us the happiness. When we are happy, and especially this kind of happiness will lead to peace. And when this kind of happiness gives you more, your mind becomes more alert, and you have the more aware, your mind is brighter. That helps you to develop this mindfulness. Because when you're happy, your mind is bright and alert, isn't it? When your energy is just low, you feel that your mind is very dull when you have no energy. So if this kind of energy, you know, they say, you know, especially we have do something good and act of kindness, you know, we're helping someone. So the Buddha always encourages us to bring this, to remind ourselves our own goodness and to appreciate ourselves. And this will bring up the Buddhists call this wholesome happiness. So there are two kinds of happiness, you know, the happiness, the wholesome happiness that is come from something that is wholesome. That is not, the happiness is not come from getting things. The happiness is not come from the senses. The happiness come from giving up, letting go. That lead to peace and calm. So that's why the Buddha encourages again and again. And that's why it's important. We are not only restrain ourselves from this unwholesome act, but we deliberately, we cultivate. So because if we always have a thoughts of loving kindness, like, you know, all the time, maybe every morning we can train ourselves, we can train the mind first thing in the morning. So we deliberately bring these thoughts of loving kindness in ourselves, that what can I do for others today? What can I give to this? You know, you bring that in. So if your mind's always, you know, filled with that loving kindness, and there's no chance for the unwholesome thoughts come in, because you feel with that, you know, there's no chance, isn't it? If you always think of, you know, good things, you know, and actually after a while, it becomes like part of you, part of just like your second nature. So whatever you think, you just naturally, you know, have the thoughts of loving kindness and think of wholesome things, think of what you can help, what you can give, rather than what you can get out of others, you know, what we can take advantage of others, you know, rather than me thinking of what we can give, what we can let go. So that's why the Buddha said that if we frequently think and ponder upon thoughts of non-ill wills, this is wholesome thoughts and non-cruelty. So then he has abandoned the thoughts of cruelty to cultivate. So we cultivate the thoughts of non-cruelty, and his mind inclines towards thoughts of non-cruelty. So this is how we condition our mind. It's just like we brainwash ourselves. So it becomes like a certain habits. So the Buddha said that this is how when the thoughts can shape us into certain happy, we have a certain habit, you know. So that's why this is how, like, when we have this inclines towards, you know, wholesome thoughts, and this will lead us to freedom and happiness. So just as in the last month of the hot season, when all the crops have been brought inside the village, a cowherd would guard his cows while staying at the root of a tree or out in the open, since he needs only to be mindful that the cows are there. So too, there was need for me only to be mindful that those states were there. There's like mindfulness is again that we aware. Sometimes the problem, sometimes we don't even aware of that. That's why we're mindful of those thoughts is there. And not to allow these unwholesome thoughts to overcome us. And this sometimes, like, you know, if you are not mindful, and sometimes even just a fraction of the moment. And sometimes we have that, isn't it? That moment we think that, I got to get this, it's so important. Like, as if that I can't live without this, I got to get it, you know? That desires come, you want to get it. And sometimes, if we leave it, you know, we stop. If we don't react to that. And after that, we think, actually, I don't really need it, isn't it? They say sometimes it's important that we learn to restrain our mind, especially that desires come. Sometimes a lot of things we don't really need it. But because of we've been conditioned, you know, that we've been doing that. If not, we are not here. If we don't have craving, we don't have desires, we are not here. So that's why to stop that is not easy. That's why when you stop that, the first thing we have to develop is awareness. You know, at least we know this thought is going to lead us to suffering. This thought is dangerous. You know, if we follow the thoughts, then we know that will lead us to suffering. So tireless energy was aroused in me. An unremitting mindfulness was established. My body was tranquil and untroubled. My mind concentrated and unified. Quiet, secluded from sensual pleasure, secluded from unwholesome state, I entered upon a bite in the first jhana. I directly knew. Birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived and had to be done, has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. So that's why the first thing, that only when we abandon the unwholesome thought, you know, that's why the Buddhas emphasize that the morality, cultivation of the mind, and wisdom. So because we need to have the foundation of the morality is the foundation for the peaceful mind. Because if we are not virtuous, so because we follow these unwholesome thoughts and we have done something that, you know, unwholesome, and then lead us to, after that, we feel remorse and we regret that what we have done. So it's very difficult to sit, isn't it? That's keep coming up, you know, to disturb our mind. They say it's important that because as long as these unwholesome thoughts, you know, is constantly aroused in our mind, and especially we react to that thoughts, and actually we've been disturbed, and the remorse, the guilt, is very difficult to calm our mind down. That's why keeping precept, so to help us to restrain our bodily action, our speech. Sometimes we regret later. we shouldn't have said this thing. And then after that, when we sit down, the minds keep coming out and it's like, oh, I'm really stupid. Why should I done that? Why I do this? And it's very difficult. It's very difficult to calm your mind down. That's why keeping precept is also will help us in cultivate these wholesome thoughts. You know, we in the Buddhist teaching, the Buddhist not only encourages to restrain, but we actively cultivate. So that's why when we actively cultivate, you know, because this act of kindness and being generous and being kind, being a good person, being a virtuous person, and it's helped us that with the unwholesome state. So we always to maintain that in our mind and becomes part of our nature. So when you have when the mind becomes quiet and calm, then you easily be able to go into a deep state. So a lot of people I know I remember in the early days, some people that they came to me, they said, I am not interested at all in any of the Buddha's teaching. All I want to know, please teach me how to meditate. And people think that they can just meditate like that. You can't, you know. It's the whole path of practice. You know, they say, I'm not interested. I just want to how to meditate. Because that undermine. You can't be peaceful, you know. It's very difficult. That's why the Buddha's point out the path, the whole path. You can't say that only, you know, because meditation is only one factor. It's only one part of the whole thing. It's just like now we are building, you see. You know, the building, you know, you need to have lots, you know, like the paper. We have paperwork, you know, with the council, with the design, what kind of designs, what material we use, takes us 3 years, and the buildings take us less than 1 year, you know. And with the earthworks and things like that, it takes us longer. Sometimes people being very impatient, isn't it? Sometimes things that we thought that we have no progress, actually we do. Sometimes the foundation actually takes longer time. All the preliminary works, you know, like keeping the precept, practice generosity, and people just very quickly want to jump into, I want the juicy one, I want to sit in samadhi, I want to in fourth jhana, and without doing any groundwork. You have to have groundwork. That is the whole part of that. So then this is how the Buddha said that then he's got into the deep state, and he's when he said that birth is destroyed, the holy life has been lived and had to be done, has been done. That means that he no longer to be reborn again. So that's he said that birth is destroyed. So that means he's already free. He's already attained enlightenment. And this was the third true knowledge attained by me in last watch of the night. Ignorance was banished and true knowledge aroused. Darkness was banished and light aroused, as happens in one who abides diligent, ardent, and resolute. So this is what he mentioned about the true knowledge actually is the wisdom. That is the when our ignorance, because ignorance is the reason why we've been stuck in the samsara, in this cycle of rebirth, because of ignorance, because of our mind can't see, we not be able to see things as they really are. We do not perceive things as they really are. That's why this is how we, because of ignorance, and we keep repeating and we don't see. The only way to break the chain is to replace the ignorant mind wisdom. So that's why this is true knowledge, actually is referred to the wisdom. So when we have abandoned or suppressed the five hindrances, because the five hindrances cloud the mind, then we can't see things. You know, it's just like the mind, when the sky is very cloudy, we can't see the sky, isn't it? So the mind is like that. So once that the five hindrances that is the one who clouds our mind. So then we can see things, and then we'll be able to see, you know, penetrate into the three characteristics, the nature of all things, the nature of existence that is impermanent, suffering and non-self, that only by attaining when your mind in that deep state, only after you have abandoned or temporarily suppressed the five hindrances. If not, you can't really see a deeper level of the three characteristics to understand the karma, the cause and effect. So, suppose, bhikkhus, that in a wood range, there was a great low-lying marsh near which a large herd of deer lived. Then a man appeared, desiring their ruin, harm, and bondage, and he closed off the safe and good path that lead to the happiness, and he opened up a false path, and he put up a decoy and set up a dummy so that the lush herd of deer might later come upon calamity, disaster, and loss. But another man came, desiring the good, welfare, and protection, and he reopened the safe and good path that lead to the happiness, and he closed off the false path, and he removed the decoy and destroyed dummy so that the lush herd of deer might later come to growth, increase, and fulfillment. Because I have given this simile in order to convey the meaning. This is the meaning. The great low-lying marsh is a term of sensual pleasure. The lush herd of deer is a term for beings. The man desiring their ruin, harm, and bondage is the term of for Mara and the evil one. The false path is the term for wrong, eightfold path, that is wrong view, wrong intention, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness, and wrong concentration. The decoy is a term for delight and lust. The dummy is a term for ignorance. The man who desiring their good, welfare, and protection is a term for datakata, accomplished and fully enlightened. The safe and good path that led to the happiness is a term for noble for path, and that is right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentrations. So this is mentioned that is by practicing the noble for path, that is the right path. So that's why sometimes, that's why we put the right views in front, the right views, that is the right understanding. That's why sometimes you can see if we, whatever we practice, if we come from the wrong understanding, so then we are not heading the right path. Actually, instead we go to the opposite. So whenever we practice, you know, if our ego become bigger than before, you know, bigger than our monastery, then actually that is something that is not quite right, you know, because as I've seen some people, you know, that after the practice, the ego even become bigger than before. They think that they know everything, you know. That is then you're heading to the wrong path, because come from the wrong understanding, you know. Especially like a lot of people don't see that even we are doing something good, you know. But if we hold on to our views that this is good, and we got upset with others, we think that we have this self-righteousness, we think that they are wrong, you know, they're terrible. And this is wrong view. Because we got upset, isn't it? When we're angry, we got upset. that is not leading to freedom. That not leading to happiness. So when right views is not that I'm right, the other person wrong, that the other person is terrible. It's right in the context that leads us to freedom, leads us to happiness. So even though we do something really good, and then even some other people, you know, might not, you know, being a virtuous person, maybe that person, you know, very nasty, but we still have compassion and kindness towards that person because we understand that the person is the one who have to bear their own, you know, the consequence of their own action, their own deed. So we don't have to get upset with them, isn't it? Because we get upset with them, then actually we don't have to be responsible for their own action, you know, that person. So we feel sorry for them because we understand, we know that, you know, that person being nasty, and that person is going to responsible for that their own deed. They have to bear the consequence of their own deed. So that's why when we were holding on, we started to label, you know, others and got upset. And then it's okay to have views and opinions. But if we attach to our own views, it's become wrong views. You know, sometimes it's not about right or wrong. So whatever views that lead us to suffering, that is wrong views. Even attached to goodness, attached to something good, you know, and give rise to unwholesome state of mind, then that is a wrong views. So when we have wrong views, so then the intention is wrong intention, isn't it? And wrong intention, because the mind is a fourth runner. This is, and just now we already go through the suttas that when the unwholesome thoughts arises, then our actions, our speech, you know, is all unwholesome, and then so we are leading to the wrong path. So here they said the right path actually is referring to the noble four path. That is the noble four path that leads us to freedom and leads us to enlightenment, that's free us, you know, lead us to happiness and freedom. So, because the safe and good path that leads to happiness has been reopened by me, the wrong path has been closed off, the decoy removed, the dummy destroyed. What should be done for his disciples out of compassion by a teacher who seeks that welfare and has compassion for them that I have done for you, because there are these roots of trees, these empty hearts. Meditate, bhikkhus, do not delay, or else you will regret it later. This is our instruction to you. That is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Any questions or comments with this? Yes?
Thank you for that, Venerable. It just comes to mind, you know, when you're talking about these things of the different kind of thoughts that come in our mind, how much in our life we are pulled away from the wholesome things. Mm-hmm. When we hear politicians or we listen to the news and everything like that, and so it's sometimes very difficult to mm-hmm. keep a track away from that and mm-hmm. not getting involved and getting all upset by what somebody says that sounds very negative. So we have to all the time, I think, mm-hmm. keep... it's just to how... It's not to get involved with it, but then in not getting involved, do we get involved or do we just say that's what they're like? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so actually, in the early days when I was a more junior nurse, normally I don't read news and I don't really know what's happening in the world. But of course, when I started to teach, so I have to know something, you know. If not, I'm going out to talk to someone I don't know anything, you know. So this is how sometimes I try to become more aware of my reactions when I read this news. How do I feel? Sometimes I find that sometimes some of those news is a bit... Sometimes I find that it's a bit I can't read. Sometimes I read the headings, you know, and I started to read. Sometimes I find that it's a bit too much. Usually I just stop. I find that it's just too, I just couldn't read anymore. Sometimes it's a bit of too much, like that it's just couldn't read, you know. Like sometimes I can't, I know roughly the overall, but I always like just aware of how I react. To do that, if you find that it's too much for you, you can't take it, it's good to protect your own mind and not to go into it. This is how I you know, even I read those things. So it depends on how, you know, how my reaction towards that, you know, the news, you know. So consciously aware and not to get pulled in and not to get angry and got upset, you know. So I just, you know, it's good to, that's why again you come back to mindfulness, you know, you're aware of your mind state, and you know for yourself, use your own discretion how much you can take. And sometimes I find that it's just horrible, some of that I can't really go into it. I find that, oh, so I stop it from there. So you have to know for yourself how much you can take. But at least you know what is happening. But sometimes we don't have to know in detail, isn't it? Do we? We don't, isn't it? So sometimes I just, okay, that's it, you know. It's just too much. Yeah. I don't know whether this answers your questions. Okay.
Yes, it does. I can see those difficulties. These things will be happening anyway, whether we hear about them or not. Mm-hmm. So it's also another case that, yeah, we know that atrocity is happening, but we don't need to know the detail necessarily.
And sometimes also, it's also helped me, is that sometimes it's good that we look it in, if we don't get involved, actually, sometimes we do have the compassion. Like sometimes, like because when we are not involved, so we become like more, you can look at it more objectively, isn't it? So yeah, we don't take it personally. So we sometimes sometimes I have compassion towards, like, you know, even the person who's doing terrible acts, because I know even the person doing that, the person suffer. That compassion means it's not that I pity you, poor thing, you know. Compassion is you understand the suffering of that person. You understand where the person coming from, and you understand the person is the one who to bear the consequence of their own act. And then you know the person suffering. That is, you have compassion towards that person. So rather than to have the judgment and how terrible this person, you know. Sometimes, of course, sometimes we have a bit of that. And the moment if we aware of that, it's good to restrain our mind, not to go further, to bring our mind back and start to bring up a thoughts of loving kindness, a thoughts of compassion, you know, thinking of a compassion, you know, towards the person, rather than go on and get sucked in and we got even more upset, more angry. Then that is how to protect our mind from that. We cannot avoid. We like, you know, like for me, like I can't run away, you know. So I used to see people, you know, counseling and, you know, listen to all the suffering, you know. So if I'm going to you know, to get involved with that emotion, I'll be very busy. So to me, I normally, that moment when I'm dealing with that person, all my mind is that I have the compassion towards that person. I'm really care, no judgment. So after that, I leave it behind. I just, you know, I don't take it with me. If not, I will drive me crazy if I take that on. You know, if I get involved in that emotion, I really, you know. So I will not emotionally get involved. But, you know, so lots of practice, you know.
Thank you.
Okay, yes.
I would like to address, like, if we affect our emotion, that the senses, the eye, see, the ear, whatever, but sometimes already we forgot, already the problem already inside of us, But how to get rid of that, like the human mind, like a computer, you know, and they read my over again and again. But it's up to us that we have to notice and understand that how we get rid, deleted, whatever got a, you know, play in our mind, that my experience sometimes is variable if we don't have awareness of peacefulness inside of us. You know, it affects us a lot, but if we understand that where is the problem come from and how long I allowed this problem go in my mind, if we understand that, we delete it. When do we delete it, our mind is empty, stillness, peacefulness. If we grab of that moment, where is the suffering? It's none. It's empty. And then our mind is empty and stillness, and then we experience of love and kindness without judgment and must know how to delete it. When they come, okay, delete it. But sometimes cannot help. Depend on the trigger, where the eye see, the ear hear, something like that. Thank you. I hope it's helped a little bit.
So any more questions or comments? And in fact, that you ask these questions, is this already that sometimes not to underestimate yourself? In fact, that you have the awareness already, that you know that this will, you know. So yeah, the fact that you ask these questions, that is really very good. Because sometimes people think that, you know, by seeing your own defilements, you need to have wisdom. So rather than you know that, you know, so rather than people think that they have no defilements, then absolutely deluded. You know, so if you know that, you know, I'm not beyond that, I'm still, you know, affected by that, that is your wisdom to see that. You know, a lot of people think that they have to abandon, they have to, yeah, we are not there yet, but at least, you know, at least you have that wisdom to see, that clarity to see that. Yes.
So I wanted to address in the sutta, he says there's no problems with wholesome thoughts, except that they tire the mind out, tire the body out.
Yeah.
And then he said when at that point you decide to quiet the mind and just have a silent mind.
Thinking about it with contemplation is different. Mm. Sometimes when we reflect, we contemplate. Thinking is different. Thinking about that with contemplation is different. Sometimes the thinking itself can lead to very tired. It's drain the mind and drain the body. But that's why the Buddha's encourage us to reflect, to contemplate. That's why we bring something up. We reflect like we do something good. So that will not drain you. That will give you energy. That, you know, but the thinking itself, you know, like thinking about it all the time, but for example, sometimes it's not unwholesome thoughts. For example, we have things we need to resolve. And sometimes, like, we're thinking about it, the more we think about it, we feel so tired, you know. But sometimes if we stop the mind, we let it be, allow it to be, and sometimes because contemplation is different from thinking. So that's why the Buddha said that he said, encourage us to reflect, to contemplate. And contemplation, reflection, that's why the Buddha called this wise reflection, that will arouse the energy rather than draining the energy. Is it?
Yes, thank you.
Answer a question?
Yeah, thank you.
Any more questions or comments? No? Okay, then we. Okay, so we finish off here.
Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namo.